Tonight I have something going on in my left ear. I went swimming in the Rio Negro last week, Wednesday, and then I got on a plane on Thursday and Friday, and on the descent, both times, my ears just popped so bad, and Friday night I went to bed in pain, so it hurts for me to go like this. I also can't hear anything out of this ear. So if you do ask a question on this side of the room, you might have to yell, wave your hand. Timothy, when we were in Brazil, I said, Doug, I'd like you to take this Sunday service and just tell about your trip to Brazil, because you're going to have 8 people asking you what you did and how it went. And it's better to tell you all at once. And Timothy decided he wanted to hear from both of us. I'll tell you right now, Doug did a wonderful job this morning, so you might be disappointed. First of all, thank you all so much for your prayers. I think every one of your prayers was answered every day. It just kept us from getting discouraged. It kept us from getting in dilemmas that were unsolvable. And I very, very, very much appreciate that. Doug decided that one of the things he'd like to do this past winter was visit Brazil. Doug has always kind of felt called to be a missionary to the unreached people, the people that have never heard about Jesus Christ. And Doug made plans with a missionary in Mexico, the one that Doug lived with for 6 months. He made plans to go to Brazil with him, Elisha Beiler. And this past fall, Elisha called Doug and said, it's not going to work. Now, Elisha Beiler is a brilliant man. He knows Spanish quite well and has done some amazing scouting on his own. I knew that he would be the best man for the job to go with Doug. But Elisha canceled. His wife was expecting a child. And then Doug's brother also said he probably wasn't going to be able to afford it. Now, as long as Elisha was going along with Doug, I said, hey, he's the man. Elisha is the man. I'm not going to go, even though I love traveling. And then Elisha backed out, and then his brother backed out, and I said, well, Lord, you know, I think you want me to go. And so that's why I went with Doug. I wanted to make sure that Doug got to do as much as he possibly could in Brazil. I didn't want him to be hindered by, well, traveling can be very, very lonely, and maybe help them get into messes. So yeah, that's why I went to Brazil. Again, why did we go? Because he's eventually wants to move there, and we want to just get the feel of a nation that neither one of us had ever been to, you know? And to some of you who have never been out of the country, you're sitting here going, what could possibly be different? You know? There's amazing things. I've been to, what is it, China 3 times, Mexico twice, and to Brazil once. And my personality always sees similarities. You know, I always smell the similarity between oregano and basil. And I have a horrible time keeping them straight. And the same happens when I go from country to country. I start seeing the things that are the same in every single country I go to. Now, America is the greatest nation on earth. And I'm not saying that because I'm proud or because I'm American, but because this land truly, truly has been blessed by God. And as most people will tell you, it's because years ago we used to be Christian. And as we run away from our Christianity and as we start living those selfish, sinful lives, our nation will deteriorate. It's deteriorating before our eyes. I love America, and I will not let anyone grumble about America in my presence. And the reason is because when you go to Thailand and China and Brazil, everything's so backward and run down and tore up and beat up and just dumb stuff every day, all day long. So when we got to Brazil, we first noticed that the airport was kind of a podunk airport. You know, there's kind of grass creeping in on the runways. And I'm like, this is another one of those nations. And sure enough, we got in the taxi, and the grass is like growing up over the curbs, and the curbs are cracked, and as we started exploring our surroundings, we realized that every once in a while there'd be a hole in the sidewalk like this big around and like 6 feet deep, some of them 10 feet deep. If you were in the dark, you could have fallen in and gotten lost. And it's just amazing, amazing things. We landed, as Doug said, in Manaus. This is a city of 2 million people. It's the biggest city of the state of Amazonas. It's one of 20-some states in Brazil. So this is only one 20-something of the nation of Brazil. And the reason we went to Manaus is because this is headquarters for all jungle activity. If you ever want to see the jungle, you're going to land in this city. It's going to take you the closest to all the surrounding jungle over there. And the guidebooks told us that it's, I forget what word they used, but it's just a backward city. And it is. I love useless facts and history. It really became something during the rubber boom, when the world had to use natural rubber for all of its rubber applications. They imported stones from Portugal for things in Manaus. That's how wealthy those people got. Now it's very run down. Again, just holes in the sidewalk and beat up roads. One day we were standing at an intersection and there was 1, 2, 3, 4 lanes of traffic, I believe, going one way, 2 lanes the other way, no stop sign and no street light. And it was just, you honk and wedge your way in. People would do U's and they'd hit the curb and have to back up. So now, Manaus, there are some very, very wealthy people. Cars are very expensive, but there are a lot of cars. Somehow these people really are well off. And Doug and I both wanted to do our own thing. You know, we wanted to go on our own. We didn't want to ask anybody for help. And I said, hey, yeah, let's try it. And as Doug said this morning, Amazonas slowly, slowly swelled. And so we suddenly realized this place was so much bigger than we could have ever imagined. I'm pretty sure the scales on the maps were even lying to us. So, what's that?
They were.
They were. I'm pretty sure of it. So... And Doug explained to you this morning that we simply didn't, I said we didn't know enough Portuguese to really get what we wanted, and we didn't have enough money to get what we wanted, and then if we had the money, we probably didn't have the time to go deep into the jungles and find a tribe that didn't have a missionary presence. But we gave it a shot. I thought it would be a lot of fun. And so, like you said, First it's Manaus to Itacoatiara, and then back to Manaus, and then it was Manaus to Atazes, and then it was back to Carreiro, and down here to Castanho, and back to Manaus. So we went everywhere we could, but the place we wanted to go, it's really only accessible by boat. And you have to find the right boat on the right day, involving more Portuguese. You know, I was expecting big rivers. They say that this part of the Amazon has the most water of any river on Earth. The Amazon is the biggest by volume of all rivers on the Earth. Just one branch of it is bigger than you can possibly imagine. One half of it is amazing. This river is black, or like Coca-Cola color, just from all the tannins coming out of the tree leaves. And this river apparently comes out of the mountains and has glacial matter. It comes out this milky white color. And right here in Manaus, the two meet. The white water is very cold, the black water is warm, and they don't mix, so you get this funny line in there. It's very neat. So, we did. We kind of, our canoe trip was not going to work out. And The last morning we were in Castaño, we decided to give away the canoe and we went down there to the river and it was gone. So we didn't even have to give it away. We took the paddles we had in our hotel room and just left them on the bank. So. Yeah, free to go home. And that's when we went into the internet cafe, and just we were desperate. We decided we needed to talk to some people who were already there. And as he said, we found a website for John and Rebecca Hawkins. And in Itacoatiara, we stayed in a hotel room. It was 40 reais a night. And for a $1 here in the U.S., right now equals 8 reais in half. It's not quite half. We stayed in a hotel room in Itacoatiara for 40 reais. Very, very cheap. But you walk into this room, it had no windows, and it was made out of poured concrete walls, or usually it's plastered brick, usually. And the bed is like sitting on this concrete platform, and I was starting to get culture shock. The bathroom was a little blocked off section in the corner of the room, and you went in there, and of course the drain kind of just goes out a hole in the side of the wall, and it did have a toilet, a private toilet, but it had a curtain for a door, and the curtain was on a bamboo rod. And it stuck in the wall on one side and hooked on a nail on the other side, and it came down to about here. Now, luckily, Doug and I trust each other. Well, at least we used to. Right? but you know, somehow the mosquitoes got in that room, didn't they, Doug? And of course, in northern Wisconsin, they always tell you, watch out for malaria, you know. So, you know, you take all that bug repellent and our hammocks have this mosquito netting on top. And the funny thing was, you never noticed anybody putting bug spray on. In Manaus, most people walk around in swim trunks. Most guys walk around in swim trunks and flip-flops. The shirts are optional, and it's like a giant beach party. Brazil is fourth in the world for consumption of beer. So they love to party over nothing. It's really a shame. Often a bar, you're walking down the street and they'll have like a tin roof coming out to the street with, you know, a couple 4x4s holding up the roof. And a restaurant is going to have tables and chairs and ketchup and mustard and mayo on the table. A bar is going to have, and it's those really, really cheap plastic chairs, right? A bar is going to have, you know, the tin roof and the 4x4s and the tables and chairs, but there will be no ketchup and mustard. And usually the bar is at a pool table. And I was like, boy, that looks like a blast, you know, to go in there and drink your brains away in a plastic chair at the side of the road. Very, very sad. And of course, one thing that can never be properly conveyed in a photo is how those third world countries smell. Okay? You guys, you have no clue what it's like to get outside the U.S. until you're walking down the street and you smell rotten fish. And you're walking down the street and you smell wet dogs. And you're walking down the street, oh, and so there you are trying to eat, and a mangy dog walks past, and you're like, you know, you weren't sure about the food before the dog walked past. It's definitely not convenient, and a lot of times you don't get cold water, or you don't get warm water with your shower, depending how much you pay for your room. I got home on Friday, and after I was home, I said, wow, this has got to be the hottest shower I've had in 4 or 5 weeks. So After all of our kind of going around trying to get to a dot that was right there, we ended up in Manos, and those people gave us a very nice house. John's dad had been there, like Doug said, over 50 years, 54 years, and way back when Manos was just a little city, and he bought a big chunk of property and put a wall around it. And I used to speak, I was against missionaries having walls, but in Brazil, you have to have walls, just to keep people from breaking in and stealing things. And usually they'll have razor wire around the top, or broken bottles, just to keep people from climbing it. So we had a nice little compound there, and he had his house, and John's house, and John's brother's house, and then the buildings for the Bible Institute. And there was one little cabin that was built for the granddaughter that they just said, hey, stay there. It was a beautiful, beautiful cabin, new, and kitchen, living room, two bedrooms, and a bathroom with warm water. And just really nice. What's that? Only in the shower, right? Not at the kitchen sink. And but still, don't drink the water. So that was really, really refreshing, even though they didn't know who we were. And it's the scariest thing of all is they're good Baptist people. So they had no clue whether we were Seventh-day Adventists or Mormons or who knows, you know. And here they are giving us a place to stay. But they were pretty easygoing. John was born in Brazil. He went to the school. It's called, I can't pronounce it. Paruque. Poriquequara. Boy, I was close. And what happened here is new tribes realized that there were enough missionaries in Amazonas and the surrounding region that had children. And they said, you know, these missionaries want their children to get a U.S. education. And when those little kids are living out in the jungle with their mother and father, there's really no hope of getting a U.S. education. So what new tribes did here, it's just river water, don't mind. What new tribes did is start a school where all the missionaries would send their children to get a U.S. education. John affectionately calls this Little America. It wasn't anywhere close, but at least for him it was. And so his father was up to Rio Negro. And then at 15, he went off to do his 4 years of high school and whatever Doug said at school. And that's where he met his wife, who also is American descent. So they were both born in Brazil. They're probably more Brazilian than American. But they love America, and they do spend some time in Texas when they come to the U.S. So they had a neat perspective on life. They were in Brazil. They watched Fox News, and they didn't have a good thing to say about that socialized healthcare. Brazil has socialized healthcare, and of course he was ranting and raving. And a man in his church nearly died like 1.5 times while we were there. They were giving him piles of drugs, and they weren't really stopping and trying to figure it out. So so we kind of told John, what John's doing in Brazil right now is planting churches in the city of Manaus. And on the north side of the city, northwest, I think it is, they had a big squatting town where all these random who knows who just came in and built these random shacks and just claimed the land, and it boomed, and all of a sudden there's thousands and thousands of people living out there, and they don't have the sewage, and they don't have the electricity, and they don't really have the proper paperwork for proper land ownership. And of course, crime is just out of control. He decides he's going to start a church there. So I think it was 9 years ago, seven, six, nine. 9 years ago, he started his, oh, that must be the first one he started by himself, but like this third one. Okay. Yeah, it's his third church he planted. So he went out there, and we're just talking about Brazilian people. Amazonas, or Manaus, is about 80%, hearsay. 80% Indian. It's an Indian Portuguese, Indian white mix. And really the only way to tell is if the guy has a beard, he's probably got some European blood in him. So it's just Brazilians that he's building his church out of. He's an independent Baptist. His denomination came out of J. Frank Norris. He's getting kind of, I guess there's a couple of Baptist denominations that come from J. Frank Norris, but he's getting a little worried about how bad those Baptists can fight over the craziest thing. So he's got a Baptist church in Northwest Manaus. I don't know if they all came to church at the same time when we were there, but it's about the size of our church, probably. Yeah.
But he's had turnover like 3 or 4 times since he came,
He's like, hopefully the group will stay. So he's got a lot of young people. They were a lot of fun. Just typical teenagers. Sat around playing guitar and played a little, or kicked the soccer ball around. Americans are terrible at soccer. But it was a lot of fun just seeing his little church. And his goal is to try to get a strong enough leadership there so that he can move on. And he said, you know, I think if I left, it would probably make it right now. But he wanted to make sure that he got some people, got the church established nicely. And that church building, by the way, was just a tin roof on poles. And then up behind the pulpit, there is a room of where you just put everything and lock it. So you have open air on three sides of the building, which is all you need in Brazil, just enough to keep the rain off. So that was nice. And as long as the boomboxes don't get too loud outside the wall, you're okay. We were in one church that also had open walls, some more Pentecostal type church, and they were just a stone's throw from a dance club. And that whole church service, they had to yell to compete with the dance music. It was very, it really got you thinking. You know, when you're sitting there and you're trying to listen to the preacher and you're listening to that music, it really got you thinking. So John's like, well, you know, we kind of told him we wanted to, you know, see what's going on with the Indians. And he said, well, you need to go up to San Gabriel. And he tossed around a couple other things. But the San Gabriel thing worked out. And like Doug said, we got on a boat. And, you know, I don't know too well what steamboats look like from Mark Twain's era. You know, I don't know if any of you know Mark Twain. You're not missing anything if you are. The man's very sacrilegious. But he was a riverboat captain on the Mississippi. I would say, one neat thing about traveling, it's like going back in time, because when you go to the other countries, they're 100 years behind. And that's kind of where we are on the Rio Negro right here. All it is boats. Only now it's diesel, Caterpillar engines. It's not steam. But the boats are still three levels. It's painted wood, painted white wood. And like Doug said, you know, the first floor, you have the engine down in the bottom of the boat, and then they have this big hole where they vent it. And if you want to stay warm on the boat, you just go right there by the motor. But you'll lose your hearing because it's so loud. And then in between the piles of potatoes and onions and who knows what, every once in a while you get a fridge or something, you hang your hammock, you know. And then upstairs you hang your hammock. And apparently they used to pack those things. And they said, you don't want to hang your hammock underneath a baby's hammock. They might not be able to afford diapers. But when you went to the bathroom, you flushed the toilet and you looked at the water, and you come out of the bathroom and the sinks are outside and you wash your hands and you look at the water and then you look over the back side of the boat and it's the same color as the water in the river and you're going, hmm. But yeah. Luckily, they did have good drinking water. So if any of you want to spend 3 days laying in a hammock, don't. It's not what it's all cracked up to be. It's a real drag. I mean, at least hammocks don't have pressure points. You know, you don't really get a sore spot anywhere, but yeah. So, and we on the way up, we hung beside a lady who, oh, she won't let anyone touch her hammock. You know, the whole boat's packed, and, you know, I can't remember where I was sleeping on that hammock, but, you know, Americans think you just lay straight in a hammock, but if you lay diagonal, you actually get to lay down more. Well, I had to lay diagonal to keep from my feet knocking into the guy's head next to me on this side and to keep from knocking into this lady on this side. And, oh, if she'd tell people, you know, you need to move your hammock string away from mine. So, but luckily, because we didn't know Portuguese, she couldn't tell us how she felt. So we just smiled and we're like, okay. You know, this is some of the most important Portuguese you need to know. It's right here. John Hawkins tells a story. He said one of the first Portuguese I learned was this. So that was a lot of fun. And the top floor just has of the boat was just beer and music, and they do a barbecue once. It was kind of a good boat to be on. So from here to here, there's like three towns, Barcelos and San Isabel. But other than that, there's nothing. And the reason is because, like Doug said, there are so many government regulations all along here. So pretty much our boat was like one of the only choices we had. You could buy tickets on an espresso boat, which is a lot less like a steamboat and a lot more like a charter bus, where you just sit in the seat straight upright and they'll get you there in like 36 hours or something. John Hawkins talked us out of that. He said, if the driver hits a rock, you will never make it. So he advised the slow boat. So, and up here at San Gabriel is a lot of rocks. They are very impassable. So anything that's in San Gabriel has to go there by plane or by boat. So that's why the boat has, you know, potatoes and onions and washers and dryers and, you know, somebody wheels on their motorcycle, and it's really the only way to get there. And along that river, I was surprised. You would see an occasional house, but not much. And Doug explained a little bit about this. America, you know, if you go into a certain health food store in town, you find all these cold cereals that have like a Amazon thingy on it, right? And 10% goes to saving the rainforest. Well, there's also organizations like that in the Western world that are trying to save the tribes. And so the U.S. is sending money down there to try to protect these tribal people. We met Norwegians who are trying to save the rainforest. We saw a German NGO, a non-governmental organization. There's money coming from all over the world to try to protect these Indian people that live along here. And so the Brazilian government is like, hey, it's free money. Why don't we do what they say? And that's why I don't think they let anybody. I did hear of a scam. What was it? A U.S. tour group paid $25,000 to get permission to go in there. And so they got to go, by the way.
They paid $25,000 and then they paid all their
fare. Right, and then they had to pay all their fare and food and everything. So if you. To see the untouched native people. So John says they'll stick a government official, you know, at the mouth of the river, so that no boats are allowed past the mouth of the river to go upstream. Because there's a lot more rivers there. There's rivers coming off both sides of this. And they'll just put guards there so that you're not allowed up there.
So then, is that possibly what those houses were? Do you ever have a house on the river?
Some of the nicer ones probably were, but there were
Yes, we did. We saw some totally palm houses. The government is working hard to get electricity out there. And I think there were schools, so the government is sticking schools out there along the riverbank. You know, there might have been Brazilians that just had the ability to get land there. How big is that river? Well, this river is only a fraction of this river right here, right? And when we were at this New Tribe School for Children, that's when I looked out across the river, and way on the other side I see a line of trees about that tall. And I said, "Now, is that the other side?" And they said, "No, that's just an island between you and the other side." So the river is bigger than Boone Lake at one given width. Now it's true all the way up here. I mean, it's unbelievable that river is that big. What's that?
We're going between islands.
Yeah. But even there were spots where it would just be open water, you know? It looked like a huge lake around here. And you'd say, no, which way do we go? Because it did. There'd be enough trees and stuff where... I think it's a good thing that Doug and I didn't actually take our canoe trip. I'm pretty sure we would still be paddling around all those islands trying to find our way downstream. And you know, someone's like, follow the current. Well, a river that big, there's a lot of places where you're looking, and you can't tell if the leaf is moving or if you're moving. And then you can't tell if the other leaf is going the same direction as that leaf. And you're like, you have to sit there and wait for the boat to go. And slowly it goes. And you're like, well, maybe we should go this way. So it's very, very big. If I didn't have a captain in that boat who knew which direction to go, And that boat runs 24 hours a day. That's why you lose your hearing. They will go upstream all night long, and just turn the spotlight on once in a while to hit someone's dock or to hit a point or hit a rock and turn it back off, and up they go. It's amazing. There's a lot of rocks up there they have to avoid. And we get to San Gabriel, and as Doug said, John Joseph Hawkins, who's the daddy of this whole Bible Institute movement, meets us with one of his church members. He leans out, "Hey, do you speak English?" And we're like, "Yeah, you must be our people." And 76, 77 years old, diabetic, like Doug said, for 31 years. I don't know if you guys know what that means, to be a missionary and diabetic. We were on the boat in Manaus hanging our hammocks when all of a sudden, and John had dropped us off like 3-4 hours earlier, and all of a sudden he comes running on board with this little ice chest, and he says, "You guys, this is your assignment. You have to, this can't get too warm and it can't freeze." And we're like, "Right." Yes. And we don't know Portuguese. I had to look up the word for ice in my dictionary. And here inside is two bottles of insulin. John Joseph was running low on insulin upriver, and he had to ask others. Now, do you guys know what happens when diabetics don't have insulin? They die. And here he was. He's like, I want you to take that insulin up there for my dad. And I'm like, whoa, this guy's a missionary. For 31, or for 50 years. He was diabetic for 31. So we figured it out. I was looking in the garbages all over, and finally got little water bottles, and I filled it with that nice river water. And downstairs they had freezers where they'd keep these big chunks of meat to feed the people. They'd give you 3 square meals a day. It often looked the same as the last meal, but it was pretty good. And so I'd run downstairs and stick one bottle in there and pull the other one up and run upstairs and stick it in the ice chest. And pretty soon the cook in the kitchen started yelling at me. Well, I didn't know what she was saying. So I'd just sneak down there and switch bottles and go back. And she caught me a couple of times. But I'm like, yeah, you know, whatever. I think she finally let me do it. She told me the other freezer. Neither one of them were working very well. I don't know what happened. Well, one time they got a fresh shipment of meat and they were trying to get it back pulled. So we got up there, we got to meet John Joseph, and one of his, he goes by Joe in English. But what's so confusing is all of his Indians call him Pastor Jean, Jean. So Doug and I were so confused. And he showed us, he was spending a few weeks at his Bible Institute that he founded. He does not work there full time anymore. He was up there just to kind of, you know, double check on some things, tweak some things, you know. And, you know, in America we think that being a missionary is like the very, very best thing that a Christian can do. And I don't know about you guys, but in my mind, you start making missionaries perfect, don't you? Missionaries are people just like you. And so he had to go out there. He said there were a couple things in church that, you know, I did work on. So he was up there. While he was up there, he was teaching every morning in his institute. But when he's not there, it's totally in the hands of the Indian people, which is really, really neat to see. So we got to stay there at the Bible Institute. That word sounds so frilly. It was just a piece of land surrounded by barbed wire fence with brick buildings. Yeah. Handmade bricks. There was a Colombian there making these bricks out of concrete while we were there. He worked like a horse. When John showed us the place we were going to stay, it was worse than the 48th room. We walked in there, and there were no beds. You have these. If you look close, there's hooks on the wall. And if you look really close, there's one opposite the one on this wall. Ha, a hammock. So we slept in our hammocks, and it was full of baby geckos. Was that that place? The cabin had baby geckos. They were the cutest. The mama gecko. Yeah. And, and that the water just flowed up. And in Brazil, the shower just hangs right beside the toilet. So, you know, it's just all one room. And on the boat, you get the shower, pretty much half of it went in the toilet when the lid was up. So that was that. But we were just really, really grateful that they were giving us a place to stay for free. And John, or Joe, did his best. He did his best to make sure we could take in as much of San Gabriel as possible. One of his church people does photos, so he took us over there and loaded us up with photos of San Gabriel. And one of his church people is building a house, so we went out there to see that. And he took us out to the garden. San Gabriel is... has a lot of Indians, and pure-blooded Indians, the Ingatu and the Tucanus, and I don't know who else there. They're still speaking their native tongue, but they also know Portuguese because, you know, they're there buying things at the store, maybe working a job. Their children are going to the Brazilian schools. So, Dona Hirene said, I'm an Indian, but I don't have any arrows. she was quite the lady. So he took us out west of town. The Indians still had gardens out there. He made sure we walked through the garden. It looked like someone had just clear-cut logged it. I didn't see a garden, but it was a garden. And there was a piece of virgin jungle we got to walk through. Amazing. Everything's big. The leaves are big. Yeah, and then there's ants that can carry the cockroach. So that a lot of times it's manioc that they grow, which is an incredibly neat plant. You just can take a section of this stick and bury it in the ground, and in a year you go out there and dig it up and peel it and soak it, grate it, squeeze it. You fry it, and you eat it. It's really nasty stuff. It looks like cornmeal with chunks in it and bits of fiber. And then you put it in your mouth, and it kind of starts softening, but not really. And so you'll be laying in bed three hours later and have this thing stuck to your tooth. It's just the farina. Antioch. But it's what keeps a lot of those people from starving to death. So it's kind of a necessity, but it's also in their blood. They say a real Amazon person eats farina. So probably the rest of it, I want to say now, we only got to see one state in Brazil. We are clueless about Sao Paulo and Rio de Janeiro and all those other places. We only got to see probably one of the most isolated states in Brazil. And it's got its unique things, like the farina. At his Bible school, he had a Colombian. The Colombian was raised in Colombia. Really? His father was cattle ranching and also cocaine. And this man had 40 squares, which one square is a meter by a meter, right?
No, 100 meters by 100 meters.
40 squares of cocaine. And he got saved, and he gave the cocaine to his kids, and he left the country. So here he was, all by himself, at this Bible Institute, I don't think he was actually going to school there. He had been at a Presbyterian Bible Institute and almost slugged the director's wife. But anyway, that's another story. She wasn't a nice lady. So he was there at the Bible Institute, and he wanted to eventually go back to Colombia and start his own Bible Institute. So he was the guy making the bricks. The other really, really neat person at this Bible Institute was the director. He was Tucano Indian, full-blooded Tucano, very dark-skinned, and his name was Pastor Luis, and his wife, Doña, or Irene, Irgeni, I don't know how they say it. So it was Luis and Irene. And Luis, I think he was this tall, wasn't he, Doug? And a belly. Oh, did he have a belly. And, of course, Indians don't have any body hair, so it was a nice Buddha belly. And in Brazil, shirts are optional, so when he got to working hard, you know. but I told Doug, I said, that man, he may be short, but he stands 7 feet tall. The guy had, he was a big personality, and he was the kind of guy that could run a Bible Institute. Very many. And Joe Hawkins said, that man has more sophisticated Portuguese than I could ever hope to have. He had grown up speaking Tucano, so he had to learn Portuguese just like Joe Hawkins. But the guy was just, Luis, was just devouring book after book after book, very smart in the scriptures. And that's right. So he was self-taught. And a hard worker. I mean, he'd get out in that garden and start hacking. Wow. His wife, and they were getting older, grandparents' age. His wife just tore something in her shoulder when she was out there hacking in the garden. So they were the people that were in charge when the Hawkins were not there. I was impressed. Right next door they had a church, a huge church. And Joe Hawkins says, you know, this church gets a lot of comments, but his friend, one of his church members, who is the really nice guy? The guy that drove us around. Ran a store, apparently very successful, and a lot of people think he paid for a lot of that church building. And that church was also probably at this size. Indians, but again, they all speak Portuguese because you have Ingatu and you have Tucano and who knows what languages. So even in the Bible Institute, they need one common language. And because Portuguese is what you're being taught in school, it's what you need for trading and to work a job. It's what they teach their Bible Institute in. So a nice church, nice Baptist, conservative. I forgot to tell you, Brazil, of course, started out Catholic. Most countries in this side of the globe did start out Catholic, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And Catholicism apparently always struggled. They say Brazilians don't make very good priests. They like to have too much fun. So the Catholic Church apparently is having a shortage of priests. the most common denomination, at least in Amazonas right now, is the Assembly of God. Brazil is very charismatic. What's that? Right. And so then you have the Assembly of God, and then you have like three splits off the Assembly of God, and then you have somebody who's a copycat of the Assembly, or I don't know if I saw a copycat of the Assembly of God. I'm sure there isn't. But they just, there's a lot of that Pentecostal. And you would see churches constantly. Church this, church that. So there's a lot of churches. And one of the churches was the Igreja Universal. Guys, let's see if I can spell it. I can't remember that word. Igreja Universal do something. Maybe my Portuguese is terrible, but this church, we also got offered tracts at least three times in our travel. Yeah.
What's the translate to in English?
A church?
Universal Church of the Reign of God.
I think. Yeah, we think. This is based on two Spanish speakers who kind of, that's kind of, we were wrong on the Jesus, what is it? We were wrong on that translation. But so we got offered tracts three times on the boat. Somebody on the boat on the way home, somebody bombed the whole boat one morning after breakfast. at Carrero, we got offered tracts. And but also, two or three times, we got offered something called a folio universal, right? It looked like maybe folio, who knows? But it's a half-size newspaper by this church. And it was very, they have color photos, you know, you could read articles about soccer or whatever. I'm assuming there were other articles in there about morals and church issues and stuff, but I'm assuming they eventually got around to God in each of those articles. But we got offered those two or three times. And I asked John about that church, and this was John's impression of that church. He says, it's all about money. And he said, most of these churches, it's all about money. This church, in specific, has a reputation for selling stupid little stuff like a replica of Moses' rod or like some blessed water or some fabric off of who knows what. Just always a gimmick. And John claimed that they'll have different services each night of the week for specific blessings on your life. So maybe Monday night, for example, you have a service on how to get your marriage blessed. Who knows, I'm kind of making this up, but or maybe the next night you have a service on how to get your business blessed or whatever. And you can fill out a prayer request, what you would like a blessing for, and you put it in an envelope, and with that you put in money. And the more money you put in that envelope, the more they will pray for blessings on your life. And if you walk back into church and say, well, it didn't happen, they say you didn't put enough money in there. So the whole church is run on money, 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 money. And apparently the Brazilians are falling for it over and over and over. It was one of the most beautiful churches in Manaus, had this name on it. Just sparkly, glitzy, huge.
John said it was the biggest business venture, the biggest business name, money-making business name
in Manaus
right now, is churches.
And we see
spin-offs.
Very, very sad. Very sad. And spin-offs, you know, you'd see the Universal Church of what was that other one we saw? Can't remember, but it was just... power of God. Right, yeah. The universal church of the power of God. So then you have other people getting on the bandwagon. So, and it, apparently a lot of the churches are just there to pull in money.
Sounds like America.
So, yeah.
It's worse.
I don't know. Actually, I haven't been to too many American churches. But so, Don, the Hawkins run very conservative churches. They don't go for raising your hands in the service and keep the music calm. So that was very, very refreshing. Doug and I sat in on a couple Catholic services just for the anywho. Often the Catholic churches, the Catholic churches is usually front and center of the little towns. And one of them, yeah, had a guy up there playing keyboard, and then a nun came up and blessed the wafer and handed out, and it was odd, very odd. But that panic, that charismatic movement is infiltrating the Catholic Church also. Also in Manaus, there's the original Bible Institute, and what they do is they just have Indians from all over the jungles that catch wind of this, and they come to these institutes. And they have six books, like that thick, of all the basic doctrines of Christianity. And for 3 months, every day, from like 7 in the morning till noon, they lecture those Indians. They go through those books step by step by step. When we were in San Gabriel, Joe did homiletics. We sat in on a class about the different types of sermons. So that was kind of interesting. They do child evangelism. They'll do a little page on child evangelism, on personal evangelism, on just a really neat basic primer of Christianity. And then these Indians, what these Indians do is they leave, and they go back to their tribes. And one of them actually studied, Santa Remoa, Indian, came down here and started his own institute down here in the jungles. So that, for all practical purposes, there's no evangelical missionary presence in that tribe, but there are Indians there that are born again, teaching his fellow tribe members these booklets about the basics of Christianity. And although Hawkins were very, very excited, John Joseph, after spending, 50-some years of his life there, was very happy with how the gospel spread. We have a video of one of his reunions. I'm running out of time. You can leave. I won't be offended if you need to go to bed. I think I'll just leave that one there. So, we came back home. Or came back to John Hawkins' place. And we went to new tribes. We had 4 days left, and we wanted to do something. So we went over to new tribes in the afternoon, and we got to talk to the director there. And he kind of told us, it's the amazing, amazing backgrounds of people. He said his parents were originally Mennonite of the most liberal movement back in the 40s. And his wife, I don't know if his wife was Mennonite, but that was pretty interesting. He was also born in Brazil and told us that there are a lot of unreached tribes, that those tribes are isolated by the government. One thing that John Hawkins kept bringing up was the fact that there are still tribes out here in Brazil, in Amazonas, in Acre, that if a baby is born with a malformity, a disformed baby, they'll just kill it. Maybe its hand is shriveled, they'll just kill it. If there's anything wrong with that baby, if it's developing slowly, they'll just kill it. And it's going on as we speak. And the Brazilian government is saying, we need to protect these people. We need to protect this culture. It's very, very backward. Has anyone ever heard of the Yanomami? Has anyone heard of Christ's Witch Factory? Who read Christ's Witch Factory? Okay, it was up in one of these countries where the Yanomami started.
Oh, the Yanomami in Christ's Witch Factory is a thing. Christ's Witch Factory is a
lie. What? Is it really? Which one had Elka? Okay. But, all right. Never mind.
No, Brendan, you are correct. Your ancestry traced back to Brazil.
Why would I work in Guana? British Guana? Or Guyana. French Guana? Something like that. But they came down and the whole place just fell to shit.
But Elka's people were in Brazil eventually.
Yeah. His ancestors.
But they're not Yanomami.
No, they're
Waiwai. Okay. But who was the tribe that decided to go to that other tribe?
The Waiwai.
This one. So Elka's people was, Christian now, thanks to what happened in Christ's Witch Doctor. And they had a burden for this next tribe of people down. Were those people shooting people?
They're still Stone Age.
Very deep in the boonies, and of course no outsider is allowed in there. So the YY got a burden on their heart to go into these people, and it was a long trek. I can't remember, boats and a 2-day hike and who knows. And they finally get in there, and they start their missionary work. And in the course of it all, the Zoet, you said it was the Zoet, they asked for we want cloth hammocks, and we'd really like some cloth hammocks. Joe made a joke about that. He said they probably made hammocks out of vines or something. He said you'd wake up in the morning with a vine design. So he said the YY get back into this tribe who have nothing, and they ask for cloth hammocks. So the YY, they probably finished up their work and they take their little 2-day hike and their little boat ride all the way back out to civilization. And they buy cloth hammocks and clothes and they go all the way back into the Zoet. And, the boat ride and the hike and who knows what all. And they get back there and they hand out these cloth hammocks. And this village is apparently like the last village of 5 villages on a circuit. And so the Brazilian government has his little agent man at the first village somewhere, so that nobody can go in from this direction. Well, this agent catches wind of what's going on 5 villages away. And he gets in his little boat, and he goes all the way back there, and he walks into the village, and he says, I want all the clothes and all the cloth hammocks on a pile right here. And all those Indians brought all that stuff, laid it on a pile. He dumped gasoline on it and lit it on fire and left. We're trying to preserve these people's culture. So the YY, I think those were the people that just finished a huge church building. And they were just down in Manaus trying to buy air conditioners for it. The missionary's like, I don't think it's going to work. But anyway, who was it that got to meet Elka? John? Or John Joseph? Or Tony?
Tony.
So Tony got to meet Elka in Manaus. Kind of neat. So the Indians want cloth hammer. And the government is saying, you can't have it. It's going to spoil your culture. The Indians are killing their... Right. There's a story of a man, I think it was a German man, who went up into this region. He got a bunch of big-shot Indians together and apparently said something like this, you people need to go back to your old ways. And did he tell them specifically, you need... Yeah. So that's what's going on. Now, I was talking with the Dewings. You think, oh, it's rainforest. Anything grows. You think you can walk in there and pick a banana here and a pineapple here and this and that. But it's actually much, much different. One of my guidebooks says that anytime, for example, a leaf falls, It gets digested so fast and put back into a plant or an animal that most of the nutrients in a rainforest are in the plants and animals. So there's really nothing in the dirt. So the Indians go in there, and they've done this for hundreds of years. They just cut out a garden, burn it, and the ash is able to grow produce for a year or two. And then after that, the soil is so weak and depleted, they have to move on. Well, the Brazilians are doing the same thing, only on a much larger scale over here, for beef ranching and all this and that. And so that's the Save the Rainforest thing. We're trying to keep these people from putting beef ranches and who knows here. So at New Tribes, we met a British, he was from Great Britain. He was a Plymouth Brethren, believe it or not, back in Great Britain. And he's with New Tribes, 75 years old. He's the guy that jogged everywhere he went. I mean, these missionary men, I've always said, you know what makes a good preacher? Is if they can talk constantly. Every great preacher I've ever met can talk and talk and talk. But every great missionary not only can talk, they can walk. These 75-year-old guys can walk. You would not believe it. He works up there with the Yanomami. He's having a very, very discouraging time. Just less than 10 people are saved in that place. 40-some years. It's one of the most discouraging works right now in Brazil. And he's stuck to it all this time. And while he was there, he got an email from his, I believe it was his daughter from the tribe. She said the Indians are starving. It's supposed to be banana time way up here, and they just don't have enough bananas to feed those people. And so Tony, the British guy, needed to scramble, very generous man, and buy farina, I think they were going to get rice shipped in from Barcelona or Santa Isabel or somewhere and haul it all out there. And of course, they try to trade baskets for food, but apparently that doesn't always work so smoothly. So a lot of times, a lot of these Indians, just that the hunting's not good, and especially as more and more Brazilians come up there, they're killing everything. They're fishing their rivers out. So they're just running out of natural resources, and a lot of times these tribes are going hungry. And so for a missionary, he does. You know, the Indians are hungry. What do we do? So Joe Hawkins up in San Gabriel tried so hard to try to get Pastor Luis self-sufficient. He had a piece of property there. He dug fish ponds to grow tilapia. And pretty soon Pastor Luis is not feeding the tilapia. And he says, Pastor Luis, why aren't you feeding the fish? He said, fish food is 37 reais a bag. They have to ship the fish food from all the way down here, upriver. You can't afford to feed fish with that expensive of food. And the fish they did raise, the neighbors would sneak in there and steal out of the fish ponds. Which means in order to even start raising fish, you got to put a wall up around the whole property that's about this tall. Yeah, which probably would be a lot of money. So then Joe Hawkins says, you know, I noticed that the only plant that really does good on this piece of property is the acai tree. So he planted acai everywhere. I mean, there was acai everywhere. But again, you still have that problem with the neighbors helping themselves to the acai. And I'm sure it's probably going to be seasonal. And so it's a real, real, real struggle for him to try to get those people self-sufficient. You know, he would like to be able to leave. He would like to quit financing them, but he just can't. It's really, really interesting to starve in the rainforest. So, Tony from Great Britain married a woman from Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. And so their home in the USA is in Chippewa Falls. I said, if you ever come home, I think he kind of wanted to go to England first. If he makes it to here, I said, are you going to talk in our church? He says, the church. I'm going to talk a long time. So, you know, Joe Hawkins is 77 or whatever, and Tony is 75. And he said, when we go home to our churches, he says, they're different. He said, they're raising their hand. And Joe Hawkins told us about the 7-Eleven songs. You know, you see, sing seven words 11 times. And so these missionaries, they're down here, and these people, these old guys, are so frugal. You know, they're so frugal, and you can just tell they've been there a long, long time. And then they're pouring their lives out to save these souls, and they go back to their churches, and they're going, "What is going on here? We don't even feel comfortable." And you know what? Those churches, they don't want to hear what Tony and Joe have to say anymore. The last time it was a question and answer session. We'll give you a question and answer session. So those the men, I truly, truly do feel alone. I said, "Well, if you come back here, we'll let you talk." So he is Plymouth brother, and I'll warn you. I have it that you can't get that out of him. But I still very, very godly man. I shouldn't just bash him. Very godly man, smiled, and you know what I noticed about those two 70-somethings? Everywhere they went, you know, everywhere they went, "What church do you go to? Do you know Jesus? Are you saved? Here's a tract. Do you read about it?" Every bus stop, every boat ride, he runs over to a stand, and he's like, "Do you have a Bible?" And the guy's like, "Yeah." And he whips out the Bible and opens it, and here, a new typer had given the guy the Bible. Whips open to Ephesians 2:8, and is like, "Hey, this is a really good verse." He says that, and those men, even though Tony is here in Manas, it's not his home field. He's constantly a missionary. Every bus driver, every boat driver, everything. But you know, he's not like freaking out about it. You know, he's not like, he's just. It was phenomenal. The guy, his smile. Yeah, I started feeling like a sinner just being around him. He was so godly. These men really, really have learned a lot. So that's about that. Are there any questions? For me, you know, ever since the first time I left the country, or the first time I was in Asia, I've always felt a very strong calling to come back home. You know, I went to Asia with an open mind, hoping God would, you know, maybe say, "Brandon, I want you to be a foreign missionary." And God always just really, really burdened me to go home. Because what's happening on the mission field is these missionaries are starting to wash out. You know? Now the old guys are amazing. I mean, those Joe and Tony are just amazing. But he said, you know, John Hawkins said, "We're just human too." He said, out at school I saw people getting fist fights. You know, they're Christians just like you. And they have the same struggles just like you. And so, in my mind, that means, well, hey, I guess there's that same stuff in Rhinelander, too. So, something that struck me on the trip was just... In John 15, he says, "I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me ye can do nothing." And in Brazil, that occurred to me over and over and over. The first time it hit me was when we were out there in the canoe. Just realizing, you know, we can't even have a good trip without Jesus Christ. And then by the end of the trip, to listen to all those missionaries and what they have to say, to realize they can't do anything either without Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is the reason you're forgiven. Jesus Christ is the reason the wrath of God no longer abides on you. Jesus Christ is the reason for everything you accomplish in your life. Without me, you can do nothing. And I believe that's literal. Without Jesus, you can't get out of bed in the morning, you can't breathe, you can't eat. You can't do anything or go anywhere. And that was just really special because what it did is it made me cry out to God every day for the smallest things. He's the reason why I can live and breathe. Are there any other questions? Okay, let's pray. Heavenly Father, I just thank you so much for this chance to be together. And Father God, I pray that you would help us all to find our niche in this, in your plan and in this world, oh God. I pray that you would help us to stay faithful to your word and to the gospel, Lord. And Father God, I pray that you would send people to the last tribes on this earth who aren't saved. And Father, teach them about Jesus Christ to save souls, Lord. And Father, I pray that you would reclaim the nations that have turned their back on you. Father God, help us to just take us safely home tonight. And Father, bless us this week. In Jesus' name, amen. You're dismissed.